Just want to thank Dean and the community for inviting me to come here and share tonight. It's I remember coming here my first 90 days, and for me, I was talking to Dean. It's funny, when I was new, when I came to this meeting, it felt like if it was huge, like 1,000 people here. And it's nice to come back years later to see that actually this meeting wasn't as big as my fear was. Do you understand? And it's really nice. I love this meeting. It's nice to see familiar faces, you know what I mean? People like Archie, Hugo, you know, even Kyle and Nick, my brother, who, you know, people that I know for a long time and that have helped me in my recovery to be here today. I don't know if everyone had read it just for today this morning, but I was thinking of a reading that I could read to start my talk. Before anything, I just want to say that I don't know your disease, but my disease is all about isolation, right? My disease, we use sexuality, religion, the color of your skin, your accent, the fact that I'm standing. The disease is going to use anything for you to shut down and stop listening to a message. You know, my disease wants me to isolate from people and to compare and to feel like I'm different, I don't belong here. Who is this guy? Where is this accent from? You know, my disease wants me dead and alone. You know, so I just want to say to you that, you know, I'm a guy that I'm extremely passionate about this program. You know, I love to have fun and I love to laugh, but I have to remember that one day this illness nearly killed me. You know, this illness one day nearly took my kids, their father away. You know, this illness nearly took my life away. And, you know, when it comes to share my experience, I take this really seriously. You know, so I just want to read just for today, because this reading kind of touches what I want to talk about tonight, if that's okay. So it says something different. It says, many of us have always felt different from other people. We know we are not unique in feeling that way. We hear many addicts share the same thing. We searched all our lives for something to make us all right, to fix that different place inside us, to make us whole and acceptable. Drugs seemed to fill that need. When we were high, at least we no longer felt the emptiness or the need. There was one drawback. The drugs, which were our solution, quickly became our problem. Right? Once we gave up the drugs, the sense of emptiness returned. At first, we felt despair because we didn't have any solution of our own to that miserable longing, but we were willing to take direction and begun to work the steps. As we did, we found what we'd been looking for, that something different. Today, we believe that our lifelong yearning was primarily for knowledge of a higher power. So the something different we needed was a relationship with a loving God. Okay? These steps tells us how to begin the relationship. You know, there's two things in here that I want to pay attention to. One is that the book is saying that there's something different we are looking for all along was a relationship with a loving God, right? And the next point I want to make in here, it says in here that there was one drawback. The drugs, which were our solution, quickly became our problem. And it says that once we gave up the drugs, the feeling of emptiness returned. You know, a lot of people hide behind their clean time or behind whatever they have, right? And clean time is amazing. Some people say, oh, clean time doesn't equal recovery. I hear that, but also there is no recovery without clean time. So we've got to respect our old timers, people who have got 20 and 30 years clean. That's amazing. But the book says that drugs was our solution. You know, it's very important to understand that. And what I want to share with you guys is, you know, the God topic for me is very, like, it's very challenging, you know what I mean? It's a challenging topic, you know. I hated the word God. I was completely against it. When I was 7 years old, I had my father holding a shotgun in my mom's head, saying that he was going to kill her. And then 2 days later, we go to church on a Sunday, right? And the pastor of the church I was visiting at the time in Brazil, where I come from, he was having an affair with four different ladies, and he was making money and abusing people spiritually. Right? So a guy who was meant to be an ambassador of God was like manipulating people spiritually and taking their money away and becoming rich on top of people's vulnerability, you know. So the topic like God for me wasn't something that I came to and I really looking forward to. You know, I really didn't want nothing to do with that word. You know, in fact, I was against it. And if there was one thing that I struggled with the 12 steps, I remember I was in rehab in 2008. And I remember looking at the third step when they say we've made the decision to turn a will in our lives over to the care of God. And you know when you're just having like, I thought I had a drug problem. And I'm thinking, you guys are taking these too serious now. You know, why do I have to turn my will in my life over to the care of God? I just want to stop smoking crack. You know, to cut a long story short. So, do you know in school when you were young and like you were in your class and people hit you in the back and you look and you can never find who is hitting you in the back? That's what the disease does to a lot of people who are pain for years. You know, I think it's very important to understand what we are dealing with. Because if you don't know what you're suffering from, if you don't know who your enemies are, you're going to get hit all the time. You know, there is a line here on the recovery and relapse chapter that says this. It's a very, very small line. It says, in our disease, and this is not a religious book. This is the basic text of Narcotics Anonymous, right? Just before anyone thinks I'm talking about religion here. The basic text says, in our disease, so in the disease that we have in here, we are dealing with a destructive, violent power greater than ourselves that can lead us to relapse. I'm going to read it again. In our disease, we are dealing with a destructive and violent power greater than ourselves that can lead us to a relapse. You know, there is something that's after us to kill us and to make us feel depressed and to make us feel alone. It doesn't matter how many years clean you've got. You know, it doesn't matter how many years clean we've got. And it took me a while clean to understand what addiction really is about. You know, I remember when I was sharing my step 4 and 5 with my sponsor, I was 7 years old. No, sorry, I was 13 years old. No, that I was 8 years old, 7 to 8 years old. And I went to the toilet and I just went to have number two, right? I was gonna have a number two. And I had a number two and you know, I knew how to clean my ass. My mom told me, you get the toilet paper and you clean your ass. That's how you do it. But I was sat there in the toilet and I saw my brother's towel hanging on the wall. And I had a great idea that I'm gonna clean my ass with my brother's towel. And I cleaned my ass with my brother's towel and I was so messed up at the age of 7 or 8 that rather than getting rid of the towel, I put it back on the wall full of shit on it. Right? And a few minutes later, I've got my mom shouting at me like, what the hell is wrong with you? Why did you do that? And you know, when I shared my step 4 and 5 with my sponsor, I put that story in there because my sponsor said, don't hide nothing, share everything. So I wrote that in there without any consideration to what that could be. And at the moment I shared that, my sponsor was like, wow, do you realize? And I said, what the hell are you on about? What do I realize what? And he took the basic text to me and he said, the book says that what makes up true addiction is what? Obsession and compulsion. Way before I took a drug. You know, people like us, we are not normal. Some people say, oh, I would love to be normal again. We are not normal. Normal people out there, they have crazy thoughts as well, but they have a gap that separates what they want to do from what they do because they have the capacity to consider the consequences of their actions. People like us, we want something, we do it, and then we think of the consequences. Do you relate to that? Even in recovery? How many people are clean but they have debts all over because they can't control their finances? How many people are watching pornography 10 times because they can't control their obsession and compulsion? You know, how many people here are clean from drugs, but addiction is still ravaging their lives? You know, I guess I'm not the only one, you know. So, that obsession and compulsion obviously came to drugs as well. You know, as I said, I was born and raised in Rio. My brother decided that he was going to go to the Air Force. He wanted to be a helicopter pilot. So, off he went. And now he comes to visit the family every other weekend. And now I'm 13 years old, he's 15, he just started the Air Force, and he's asking me to go to party with his mates. There I go, my brother's dancing, flirting, communicating, and chatting, and being cool, and I'm sat like, feeling awkward and different, and wondering how the hell can you flirt to that girl? How can you actually dance? How can you be so cool? And once I have that first drink, I found everything I was looking for. You know, the point I'm trying to make is many people think that they're going to get clean and things are going to be great. You know, I heard that in New York, when you pick up the white keyring, some people used to shout like, oh, the war is over. The war is over. But if you suffer from what I suffer from, when you get clean, the war begins. Yeah. Do you understand that? Yeah. You know, it's important to me to understand that drugs gave me freedom from self. You know, drugs gave me freedom from self-obsession. I couldn't communicate, I used to communicate. I hate you, I use you, you're the best brother I ever had. You are ugly, I use you, you're beautiful, I'm gonna marry you. Do you understand? Drug was good to me. Drugs changed my perception of reality. Drugs helped me to get out of myself. And one day, my best friend disappeared. One day, drugs left me. My best friend, all of a sudden, I don't know, traveled the world, and I no longer found that friend. And I was seeking that first high. I was seeking that first high for 15 years, and I couldn't find it anymore. You know, so what I want to share with you guys is, today I'm a guy that, you know, I have no problem with the word God anymore. You know, I understand today that I was very immature when I was a child, and I didn't have the capacity to understand that God was never punishing me, who was doing stuff with people. And all along I was confusing God and people who are meant to represent God. And that took me away from believing in a higher power. And I want to say that you have the right to believe in anything you want in here. You even have the right not to believe in anything. The book says that, you know, everyone, the only requirement for membership in this fellowship is the desire to stop using drugs, nothing else. You know, you can be a Muslim, Christian, whatever you are, you know, atheist, you're welcome in Narcotics Anonymous. But our fellowship and the 12-step program talks about God very often for a reason, you know. And what I want to say to you guys is drugs, to cut a long story short, I don't want to talk about war stories, we all have. I entered ghettos, I had people with shotguns in Brazil in my head, I had, you know, in the middle of a shootout in Rio. We all have those crazy stories, we all know it. Do you know how posh my addiction was? My addiction was so posh to the point where I was beating up the mother of my kids in front of them. When I was a child and I saw my own father doing that to my mom, and I promised I would never lay my hands on a woman. And I found myself doing the same to the mother of my kids. Right? My addiction brought me to the point where, you know, if you're homosexual, you know, great, I love you, you have the right to have any. I'm not. And I had homosexual thoughts and behaviors to feed my addiction. Right? My addiction brought me to places that I never thought I would go to. Do you understand? Everything, every line I drew and I thought that I was going to commit to, addiction made me cross that line. You know, I became a monster. I've done things I thought I would never do. You know, my kids were so scared of me that I would enter home and they would hide under the bed, just like me and my brother did. You know, addiction humiliated me, humiliated my family. You know, what I suffer from wants to kill me. And the problem is, even clean wants to kill me. So what I want to touch with you guys is, in 2000, I understood that I could no longer use drugs. I understood that drugs was no longer solving my problem. Drugs was no longer working as they did before. It was no longer, you know, changing how I felt. You know, before I felt guilt, I use and I feel okay. I feel shame, I use and I forget. It got to a point where I feel shame, I use and I feel shame. Do you understand? I feel like a trauma and I use and the trauma is there. So one day drugs stopped working for me. So I came to this fellowship and I was the kind of newcomer. There's a lot of people in here like Archie and Nick. And people that know me well, like Hugo as well, that can confirm that. I didn't question my sponsor. If my sponsor said, Raph, Monday 10 o'clock, you're doing step one, I would be there. Monday 10 o'clock, I'm there to do step one. And if my sponsor say, you've got 40 days to finish your step one, you know, I want to see you this day and this time, I was there. You know, I heard once, if you chase hope like you did with dope, you're never going to use it again. So if you chase hope like you did with dope, you're going to be okay. You know, I hear a lot of people in the fellowship, I don't know if you can relate, not in here, but in Brazil, people say that quite a lot. People say, I have a big problem trusting people. I can't trust people. Man, if you suffer from what I suffered from, there is only one person that I have to be extremely careful trusting, and that person is myself. Thinking I could do it, thinking that I had the power to beat this disease and thinking that I knew the way, you know, thinking that I was strong has made me many times say yes to things I wanted to say no to. And I guess you guys can relate to that as well. You know, so I didn't have a problem. I knew that I couldn't trust myself. If you were a newcomer, I remember living in East London and coming to West London for meetings. And I used to wear my headphones 24/7. Because I was scared of what the disease is going to say the next minute. Do you know anyone that trained, the obsession is just on you? you don't want to use, you know you're going to harm everyone, and you know it's not going to work, but the disease is on your ear saying, just get one. You know, so I had headphones 24/7 because I was scared of my own mind. You know, so when I got here, you know, if you are in that step in recovery, man, when you're struggling to trust people, get out of it. Get out of it, push through. The only person you can't trust is yourself. You know, the disease speaks in a voice that is very difficult for me to realize because it speaks with my own voice. Do you understand? So I came and I've done everything, man, and I've done 157 meetings in 90 days. You know, I've done 3 meetings a day for my first 60 days. You know, I've done what I could. I've done step work when my sponsor asked me to do. I took service commitments. I was like one of those newcomers that you look and you say, these guys, what are he going to get? Which I did. I stayed clean. And the problem was, you know, I don't know you guys, but I'm very good at changing what somebody says or what a book says. You know, if my mom in the past told me, Raf, I've got 5 quid in here. Go to the shop, bring milk, 3 breads, and a beer. I would go to the shop, get 5 beers, 1 bread, and no, do you understand? And I would say to her, I didn't understand well. I like to have my own way. I like to have my own way, and I think I can do it. And this book says, over and over again, that all of us in here suffer from a spiritual void. It's not an emotional void. It's not a physical void. We all here suffer from a spiritual void that can only be filled by God. Do you think I wanted that? God, come on, give me guilt, give me pain, give me food, give me anything that can change the way I feel right now. You know, so I got clean from drugs, and when I got to 2 years clean, I started to make a bit more money. I started to look healthy. I came to realize that I was no longer like smoking cannabis, but like a friend of ours say, I started to smoking lust. I was no longer sniffing cocaine, but I was sniffing resentments and gossip. You know, I was like a substituted spiritual principles that the book told me I should live by for character defects. I've joined the club of the people in NA, the gossip, the talks about others, and they, you know, and if you are there, you know, God bless you. It's a process. I've been there myself. You know, and what happened is when I got to 2 years clean, I'm now, remember that, right? So I've done domestic violence and active addiction. I had homosexual thoughts and behaviors, although I'm not homosexual. And I've done lots of things, like I stole from my family, I spit on my mother's face. You know, I was dirty, I was bad, I was crazy. And I thought, you know, I blamed that on drugs. When I was sharing my step five with my sponsor, saying to him that, you know, I had these crazy behaviors with that person and that I've done domestic violence, I was like, yeah, I've done that because I'm high. I was high and I was high. And I'm 2 years clean. I'm working in Victoria and I'm stealing money every week from work. With 2 years clean, I'm going to meetings and sharing spiritual stuff. And I'm beating up the mother of my kids again clean. And I'm stealing money because I'm going out with 5 different girls at the same time. And if you don't love yourself, you know, I was working as a waiter and I was telling the girls that I was an undercover police officer. We laugh in identification, thank you. You know, I was telling the girls, I'm a doctor, I'm training, you know. And one day, funny enough, one of the girls I was dating, she came to the restaurant and she saw me working. That was a good one, trust me. Anyway. So I was saying all these things, you know, and now I'm like, man, I'm 2 years clean, I'm sponsoring people, I finished the 12 steps, and I'm going to do them again, and I have a sponsor, and I'm doing meetings, but I'm now doing all the things I blamed on drugs clean. You know, and it was a struggle, man. I was like, what's going on here? I felt suicidal, I felt like using again, and I was like, what do I do now? You know, and I didn't realize that, like this book says, that when you put drugs down, people say, I'm 5 years clean, that's great, amazing. You know, don't get me wrong, it's beautiful. But how are you treating your neighbor? How do you treat the waiter that's serving you at the restaurant? Are you still allowing your feelings to dictate your actions? You know, are you still allowing like an argument with your girlfriend dictate how you treat your neighbor? You know, are you being dishonest when you're paying a bill? You know, are you avoiding the TV license when you should not be avoiding? You know, recovery and clean time, they're completely two different things. Completely two different things. Recovery for me is being a good father. Recovery for me is being accountable. Recovery for me is praying for those that are gossiping about me. You know, recovery for me is being the best man I can be today. It has nothing to do with clean time. You know, my dad is 78 years old. He's 78 years clean. That doesn't make him a good person. Do you understand? So if you're clean for a long time and you're struggling, you know, I just want to share my experience. I know what it is like to be clean and miserable. And, you know, what I had to find out is I met this guy, and he was talking to me. He said, Raph, the book is saying that only a relationship with God, that is aligned in the Living the Program chapter, that says ongoing recovery is dependent on a relationship with a loving God. It doesn't say ongoing abstinence. It says ongoing recovery is dependent on a relationship with a loving God. And he came to me and he said, very challenging, very delicate subject. He said, Raph, who is God for you? And that's like, wow, you know, that's too heavy in here. Because in this fellowship, the book says that everyone have the right to believe in anything you want. And the literature even says that because that right is total and without any catches. But it then comes and says further, because you have this right, it's important to be honest about your belief if you are to grow spiritually. So this guy came to me and said, who is your higher power? Who is God for you? And I was like, well, he's loving, caring, and greater than myself. He said, no. He said, that's what step two tells you, that your higher power should have his requirements. That's not your higher power. So my question to you is, who is God for you, for Raph? Not God for Archie, for Hugo, for Nick. Who is Raph's higher power? And I was like, listen, I'm going to tell you one more time. My higher power is loving, caring. He said, shut up. He said, do you want to talk as a man? Do you want to grow spiritually? Do you want to go to the next? Do you want to grow in recovery? He said, my question is, who is God for you? And I was like, I don't know. You know, I came to realize that for the first 2.5 years clean, 3 years clean, I was saying I believed in a higher power, but I didn't know anything. You know, he came to me and he really messed me up with this thing. He said, how can you say that you've done a step three and you've done your will in your life over to take care of a God and you don't even know? He said, maybe you have done your will in your life over to take care of yourself. And that was challenging to me. You know, I wanted to punch the guy. I didn't like the way he spoke to me. And I'm thinking, who are you to tell me what I should believe? Which he never did. He simply shared with me that without realizing, many of us, not in here, in Brazil, many of us lie to ourselves, saying that we believe in a higher power, but we don't even know what that is for us. Do you understand? And I'm not talking about specific higher power. You believe in whatever you want. You know, it's none of my business what you believe. What I am, however, saying is, if you are telling yourself you've got a relationship with a higher power and you don't, it's okay to say that you don't. You know, because in step 11, they're going to tell you to go out there and seek and search and see what can happen to you. You know. So, what I want to share with you guys is, I went out of Narcotics Anonymous, okay? But I didn't leave Narcotics Anonymous. Okay, some people here know what I'm doing outside. It doesn't matter. I'm just a recovering addict, I'm messed up, I'm broken. You know, I don't believe that I have earned my seat in here. Some people think that they earned their seat. I'm blessed with my seat. I'm blessed that I didn't die out there. You know, the thing I did earn though was the application to the program that I had to put. And that has, you know, helped me to stay clean and so on. But I didn't earn a seat in here. I'm blessed to have found the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, because before NA, I've tried church, I've tried psychiatry. Like the literature says, I was 17 years old and I was sat in a psychiatry doctor office and he didn't know what to do apart from giving me medication. You know, so I've tried several places to deal with this addiction problem that I even didn't know I had. And, you know, so what I did is I started to seek a higher power. I started to go to places and seek, what is this thing for me? You know, I wanted to search. I wanted to find out, what is it for me? So I went outside of Narcotics Anonymous and I kept on coming back. And what I've realized is that, just like this Just For Today in here is saying, I was expecting a new girlfriend to fill that spiritual void. I was expecting the one more porn movie to fill that void. You know, or the new job promotion to fulfill that void. And if you're anything like me, the more I get, the more I want. It's like if there's a hole in my stomach, and no matter how much food I put, it's always throwing out. Do you understand? And what happened to this guy here is that my experience is like the book says, nothing else will fill that spiritual void but you being connected and having a relationship with your higher power, whatever that might be to you, okay? And the last thing I want to say as I'm coming to an end is there was a man that he had great faith in God, right? So this man, imagine like, I don't know, somebody who had amazing faith in God. He went to the ocean, he was surfing, and all of a sudden he starts to drown. So the guy's drawing, he's nearly dying, and and he had great faith in God. So he was praying while he was drawing that, you know, God save me, please help me, you know, I need you right now. And a fisherman came by. You know, a fisherman came on his boat and said, you know, jump here. You know, I'm gonna help you, you're gonna die. And the guy looks to the fisherman and says, I don't want your help, I trust God. I put my whole faith in God, I don't need to get out of here. And the fisherman lives. You know, after trying to insist, the fisherman goes. And the guy starts to drown again, so he's nearly dying again. And a helicopter comes by and can see the guy, and they throw a ladder and they say, come up, you're gonna die. And once again, the same story. The guy's like, I don't need you guys. You know, God is sufficient. God will save me. I trust God. I don't trust none of you, Lord. And to cut a long story short, man, the guy's starting to draw again. A piece of wood comes by, and he was so exhausted by now that he thinks of jumping and grabbing a piece of wood so he can float. But his pride was so huge that he didn't, and he died. So he goes up to heaven, and he gets to heaven, and he sees God. And he says, God, I'm so disappointed at you, man. He said, I'm so disappointed at you. He said, I trust you my whole life. I put my faith in you and no one else, in you alone. And look at me, I'm dead. I've got my kids there, my wife there. Why did you do that to me? And God is looking at him saying, my son, I'm so disappointed at you, man. Man, I saw you drawing and I sent you away as a sponsor. I saw you drawing and I sent you away a step working guide. I saw you drawing and I put a net of support network in front of you. I saw you drawing and I, man, all along was trying to help you and you say no to me all the way through. You know, the moral of this story is that doesn't matter how much you believe in God, rather use people and seek people like me to help you. So it doesn't matter your belief systems, it doesn't matter if you are gay or straight, it doesn't matter if you are white or black, I need you, you need me. It doesn't matter. You like me or not, you might be the person they're going to save when I need the most. Do you understand that? So what I'm saying is, don't get too caught up when you find a higher power that you leave the rooms that God has sent you in the first place to save your ass. Do you understand? I'm a guy that have faith in God and I'm involved in my spiritual belief outside and I do lots of stuff there, but I will never leave the room. The only place that has ever helped this guy here to get clean, which was Narcotics Anonymous. So to end, I just want to say to you, if you're a newcomer, this program works. It really works. If you are new in here, if you have the obsession to use, if you think you can't do it, you are right, you can't do it. But we can do it. On your own, you're in trouble and you're going to struggle and you're going to suffer. You know, hang out with people, get a sponsor, work the 12 steps. You know, a guy once said to me, recovery will not come by sitting in a chair. You know, these here is just a gathering. It's just a gathering where we come to see each other, hear stories. The real problem, the juice of this fellowship happens behind the curtains. It's when you go to your sponsor's house. It's when you cry on your sponsor's shoulder, saying to him how you feel. You know, the real, real work happens after the gathering here. So if you are new, please don't expect everything to come on a silver plate. You've got to go after it. You've got to put application, and it's going to work. So I came in here, beating up the mother of my kids, broken, on benefits. Man, I was messed up in all ways you can think, you know. I looked like death. I looked like I had a terminal cancer. You know, recovery has changed my life in ways that when I look back, I can't even believe. I was talking to Nick just before the meeting chat. I just can't believe what happened by the simple fact of coming to a meeting of my father's anonymous. You know, it makes me emotional. I just can't believe it. I was broken, man. I remember looking up a picture of when I was, I've got a minute left. My sister sent me a picture of when I was 7 years old or 8 years old. And I remember it was 3 months before I got clean. I remember looking at that picture thinking, what happened to that little boy? Like how that little boy that, you know, had great intentions and a great heart and loved his family became the monster that I became. You know, I came in here with so much guilt, man. And the day I opened that book, and the book said that actually I didn't suffer from a moral deficiency, I suffered from a disease, and that there was treatment about it. And the treatment to this disease is called the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. So if you do get involved with that, your life will change dramatically. Thank you for listening, and I'm going to leave it there. Thank you. Thank you.